Hello, listener. It's Helen here, and I'm going to tell you about a new show on the RQ Network called The Town Whispers. This folk horror podcast excels in atmospheric, dark storytelling as it explores the hidden tales of a foggy town called The Fort. As the story goes on, it begins to uncover the sinister workings of a mysterious group of entities called the Long Shadows, who seem to hold sway over the town. Tune in each week to find out what becomes of the people living in the fort and the terrifying plans that have been in motion since the first town boundaries were drawn. If you're a fan of horror movies like Midsommar and The Witch, you should search for The Town Whispers wherever you listen to your podcasts, or visit www.rustyquill.com for more information. Happy listening.
Was it you wouldn't download a car?
I wouldn't download a car. That's what was going through my head.
Right.
My head immediately was...
Oh, yeah.
Absolute banger.
Rusty Quill presents Enthusiasm.
Hello, friends and fans, and welcome to Enthusiasm. I am your host, Helen Gould, one of the best Rusty Quillers. And today we are talking about pirates. Don't laugh. I will defend my title of best Rusty Quiller against any and all comers. Anyway, time for pirates, and I am extremely... I keep trying to think of like different words that mean happy, and for some reason my brain went blitzed just then, but I think that means drunk. So instead, I will just go with happy. I'm very happy to be joined by Faye, Jeremy, and Nemo. And as always, we're going to introduce ourselves in alphabetical order. So, Faye, what are your pronouns and what do you do?
My pronouns are... My pronouns are Zia or they, them. I will answer to either of those. And I am a voice actor, a performance poet, and a business change manager, but that's nothing to do with Rusty Quill.
I had no idea you were a business change manager.
Yeah, that's how I pay the rent for the most part. mostly telling people, are you sure? I've made a list. Are you sure you want to do that? That's a large part of my job.
That sounds about right. And Jeremy, can we have your pronouns? And can you tell us what you do?
Yes, I am Jeremy. I use he, him pronouns. And I am the writer, creator, / producer, / director. I think I do everything for the Storage Papers podcast. Pretty new to Rusty Quill.
Ooh. Oh, well, welcome aboard. We're extremely happy to have you here.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Yay. And last but absolutely not least, Nemo, can you give us your pronouns and tell us what you do?
Hi, my name is Nemo Martin. I use they, them pronouns. And I am currently writing a new podcast for Rusty Quill called Trice Forgotten. And it's about pirates and it's cool.
Woohoo! All right. Okay. So let's dive right in. A lucky volunteer, please, explain to me what is so interesting about pirates. For me, it is the fashion sense. I do not know if that is the same for all of you.
Can I jump on this one first? Is that okay?
Absolutely.
So I guess for me, what's interesting is how like modern society has warped the personification of pirates. Historically, they were very bad people. Now they're common in entertainment, right?
I mean, we never have bad people in entertainment.
That'd be never.
Terrible and wrong.
But it fascinates me how that happens. And I mean, I'm a Pirates of the Caribbean movie fan, so I can't judge. But at the same time, when you look at the actual history of the stuff that's happened, it's like, woo. I can't think of many other groups we've done that for.
Apart from, you know, con artists in the many, many films and TV programs we have about glorifying that kind of thing.
What are con artists but land-loving pirates? Jeez. weaker.
Bank robbers.
Con artists.
Yeah,
pirates of the land.
Make lots of media about. Besides, if you start looking at what, I don't know, the East India Company got up to during their time, it's very similar kind of period. As we talk about the golden age of piracy, it's a very similar to, for probably no coincidence, the golden age of the East India Company and the they got up to. I wouldn't want to glorify them. If I had to glorify one of those two, I would glorify the pirates, who at least were democratic and weren't trying to run entire countries, you know, just to make a profit out of them. I get a bit passionate about this.
Yeah, I was like, oh, do I throw in my like pirate facts so soon?
But
I was like thinking,
I would love to hear some pirate facts.
Well, mostly I'm writing a musical currently called Asian Pirate Musical, which is about Asian pirates, and it's a musical.
So cool.
And there is one pirate, we refer to her as Shu Yang, but she's mostly called Cheng Yi Sao, but that means the wife of Cheng Yi. So we're like, no, we're going to call her Shu Yang, which was more of her name. So she was a Chinese 19th century pirate. And when I was doing research for the musical, which happens to be very helpful here, this writer called Yoriko Ishida, she was writing about how at the time in China that a lot of the piracy started because there was a population boom in China because of the Opium War. Britain, again, doing another great thing. And there were like several population booms which just forced loads of people out into the sea. And so Shu Yang was able to like basically profit off of the amount of people going into the sea and basically becoming homeless because land became such a luxury, and made a whole fleet out of people who suddenly found themselves without any land and stuff. And yeah, Ishida was writing about how what you were saying about like it's become so glorified specifically because of this race thing that was happening at the same time, like the creation of ideas of like, oh, this powerful Chinese fleet that are capturing loads of white British soldiers and naval officers who are fighting. And so yeah, like there's this combination of like Hollywood like ideas of like, oh, pirates and like the glorious kind of like, you know, golden age moving into Cheng Yi Sao and 19th century, and like, oh, like pirates have more villainous qualities now because they're like actually people of color dominating white people. So yeah, there's a really interesting transition there. That was my pirate spew. Got it out early.
Yay! Info dump time.
We love a pirate spew.
I'm glad I didn't say their boots.
That's okay. I said that. I said that. I do kind of get where you're coming from, Jeremy, though, in terms of pirates were typically like the bad guys in a big slew of fictional media. And then I guess you mean that like lately they've become underdog heroes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's for me, you know, I'm all for entertainment and I can take it with a grain of salt, but it's interesting to see how people kind of twist it to put the Hollywood spin on it, and also to make it more, I guess, just more entertaining. I personally, I love hearing about one of the other things is the like treasure, you know, at least off the coast here in the US, you know, the coast of Florida has treasure hunters all over the place because there's shipwrecks out there. You have people spending their lives just going out there looking for that stuff. It's amazing how people can get really wrapped up into this world, you know?
That's really interesting. I hadn't thought about there still being pirate ships and pirate wrecks out there.
Oh, yeah.
But Faye, tell me what you're so interested in when it comes to pirates.
Oh, gosh. A lot of that, I guess. And, you know, not just the long curly hair and beard aesthetic, which I'm trying to rock more. But, oh, I guess I was introduced to pirates quite early. My grandparents had one of these, this massive, like, bigger than my torso, even now, kind of hardback books with a skull and crossbones engraved on it. If it had a soft cover, it had long since lost it. It was a lot of very densely written text and, you know, reproduced engravings about piracy. And one of the things that you saw in there that you didn't see, because this is the '70s when I was, you know, a little kid, you didn't get to see women taking that same part in you know, in swashbuckling and adventure and all the rest of it, anything where people were waving swords around on the TV, no matter how old the films were, they were generally male. But in the pirate books, you were seeing the likes of Bonnie and Grace O'Malley and all the rest of it, including some who mistook each other for male pirates and all that kind of interesting confusion and stuff. And that, along with the fact that more recently discovering that how much more democratic the privateers were, for example, you know, that has really made me go, we've been faced with a lot of propaganda from, well, the East India Company, I don't know, the inheritors of that, about what piracy means, and maybe it's a more, some more complex layered thing. So that's something I guess I started reading about more about 5-10 years ago. So yeah, the aesthetic is fabulous, and you know, swinging from the rigging and all the rest of it. But yeah, it's something that I watched a lot as a kid. You know, read about when I was very small, and it's sort of been threaded through lots of themes throughout, and it's still something we have very mixed ideas about what it means, even in the first 2 minutes of this conversation. We've had several different versions of what piracy means. So yeah, all of that really, I guess.
Well, that's definitely part of the charm. The fact that there are like lots of different archetypes, I guess, of what a pirate is. Nima, what do you reckon? What's interesting to you about pirates?
I think very similar, like the gender rebellion and the general theme of rebellion, I guess, and part of that, like Hollywood, but also like most media things, like romanticization of piracy and like, I guess, sticking it to the man and just being really like able to do what you want in a certain way, like, yeah, like Faye was saying, gender presentation, but also like if something doesn't seem right, like lawfully, if it's lawful but not right, I feel like a lot of like fictional pirates have been very much like, well, I can fix that by being cool and badass and like like killing a cop, like that's very like exciting.
Yeah,
so I feel like, yeah, and I guess also silly, because I think a lot of, like, I guess, bandits and stuff, I guess the Red Rider, not Red Riding Hood, the other one, Robin Hood, is very, yeah, like, heroic in a certain way that's very, like, goody two-shoes, whereas pirates get to, like, have that silliness as well. They get to have, like, the playfulness as well.
I'm intrigued to know which Robin Hood you're reading about, but okay, yeah.
Oh, are we going to go on a Robin Hood tangent?
We might do, I suppose, but yeah, no, there's as many different versions of Robin Hood as I guess there are of, I don't know, Blackbeard, but that's the thing. Figures like that can be whatever we need them to be, but generally, as you say, they're about rebellion. They're about doing what's right, not necessarily what's lawful, but again, it's about who got hold of the imagery and what they've used it for as to what is the prevalent notion you have of it. I was also thinking while you were talking to him about how we don't say music or TV or video theft, we say piracy. We don't call it larceny or theft or whatever. People always call it piracy. It gives it that particular cachet, which, yeah, like you say, unlawful, but in this case seen as being rebellious and moral. I like that.
When I was, I want to say in the 90s, when I was in high school, they came out with these kind of previews to the movies where it was, you know, they had Be Kind, Rewind, and then they had this guy that was going around selling pirated DVDs out of his trunk. Yes. And it was this PSA of like, you know, I forget the slogan, don't be a pirate, but it's basically, it's the same as theft, you know? And it's got this...
Was it, you wouldn't download a car?
I wouldn't download a car. That's what was going through my head.
Right.
My head immediately was...
Oh, yeah.
Absolute banger.
It wasn't off-putting, was it? It was, yeah. All of that kind of thing.
But it sticks in your head, because how many years later?
Yeah, yeah.
In Japan, they have this one, which is like these two sexy dudes in suits, but instead of heads, they've got like a police siren and a video camera. And like the amount of fan fiction that is written about these two is like wild.
Oh my gosh.
Not that I've looked.
No, no, no.
Of course not.
That is beautifully specific. I love fan fiction for that. Well, that's that. I mean, I consume and write a fair amount of historical fan fiction, and the sheer quantity where people have gone, this is great, but what about pirates? And just everything gets turned into pirates if at all possible. And I love that. Yeah. Just want to add extra swashbuckle and open frilly shirts. Pirates.
Yeah. Oh, the open shirts is definitely, yeah, I forgot to mention that, but yeah, that is definitely the appeal, right?
Yeah. I like, and this was a Black Sails meme, but someone was saying how they love that one of the pirate aesthetics is like to have massive white shirts. It's like, you shall have no idea what my torso looks like, but look at my butt in these tight black trousers. Everyone shall know.
Yes, absolutely.
Anyway. So the next question I wanted to ask was whether we had any favourite pirates, either from fiction or from history. I would like to start with someone else because I forgot about Pirates of the Caribbean because I was so much thinking about Black Sails. And I forgot that was a piece of media that is available. Does anyone have one that like particularly captures the imagination?
Yes, I do have a favourite pirate. Okay, I'm just going to jabber about this person and then you can, I don't know, fast forward me if it gets too much. But I'll try not to info dump. So I had kind of vaguely knew about her and then I was asked to write, of all things, a sonnet about Grace O'Malley. So of course went deep into the research, and at which point I realised to put this woman's life into 14 lines of English poetry just seemed a bit rude, so I had to kind of lampshade that in the poem itself. But I mean, Grace O'Malley was like definition of gender non-conforming badassery. She was part of a noble family in Ireland, and she'd grown up at the time when England mostly left Ireland to its own devices, just kind of went, you know, just send us the tribute stuff, but we won't pay too much attention. But yeah, so she was part of this kind of seafaring family, and just the sheer number of apocryphal stories that surround her, including she wanted to go off on a ship that was raiding the coast of Spain as a kid, and her dad said, oh, you can't go. You have long hair, which will get caught up in the ropes, so that's why girls can't go to sea. So she turns up the next morning with her hair cropped to practically nothing, and ta-da! And the dad went, yeah, okay, touche, fine. So off she goes. She apparently gave birth to, I think, her first child on board ship. And less than an hour later, the ship was attacked by, I think, Turkish raiders off the Barbary coast, at which point she just gets up off the childbed and sets to with the sword to fight off the rival pirates, I guess is the word putting
God.
It. Right. Wow. She just, and that's it. Every story you read, and there are a lot of them, and some of them are a little bit contradictory, but every single one basically says she led from the front. She fought with her men. She was a fantastic, I guess, general, admiral, however you're going to put it. So she was a good strategist. She was just unstoppable as well. And when a rival Irish nobleman killed her second husband, she didn't just go and take her vengeance on his main castle. She went, that was good, but what about everything else he owns? Let's burn it to the ground. But then by the 1590s, and she's in her 60s by this point, I should point out, England's starting to take a much more hands-on approach to ruling Ireland. So more troops are being landed. You can see, I mean, we could go off into a whole tangent about how that kicked off everything we're still seeing. But They're being basically harassed. They're being chased from place to place. She's not able to settle in any castle for anyone or home for anyone at any length of time or whatever, still in her 50s and 60s. And then her sons are captured and taken to England. She gets described in a letter to Queen Elizabeth by the guy doing most of this, Richard Bingham, as nurse to all rebellions in the province. And that also has a perfect iambic pentameter, so I was able to just have that as a line in the poem, right? Oh, excellent, I'll have that. It's joint. this is the great bit. She heads off to England because she's like, enough is enough, and manages to negotiate with Queen Elizabeth directly, both of them speaking in Latin because neither of them spoke each other's native language.
Oh.
Right. She manages to negotiate for not only the release of her sons, but the release of her land, so she's able to go back and be, you know, reunited with her clan and all the rest of it, and take her place in her, for, of course, for not raiding any more English ships. No, can't want to do that. But also to have an apology delivered to her, and she insisted, this is the bit I love, that the person who had to hand her castle back and give her an official apology was this Richard Bingham. And she just... Queen Elizabeth tried to make her like, I can't remember, like a duchess or a countess or something like that. And she said, no, you and I are princes. I'm of equal rank to you. Mm. Thanks, but no, I'm not going to take a step down for an English title. And just, just so much of that. She died at 73 and she was still heading out to sea with her men. As far as I can tell, right into like towards the right to the end of her life, and she's just amazing. And I'm going to stop now because I could go on.
No, oh, that's really cool. I really appreciate all that.
I thought it was really interesting that a lot of her life like echoes Xu Yang's life as well.
Yes,
like, very very similarly, and like. Though Xu Yang at the end, like the government was like, hey, listen, like we are fighting the British and the Portuguese. We do not need to be fighting you two. Can you like come and destroy them for a bit? And she's like, yeah, right. And she like did that for a bit. And then they were like, all right, cool. You did a good job. She's like, cool. I'm going to be a salt trader in scare quotes. Did that for a bit. And then was like, actually, you know what? I think I'm going to be a pirate again. Like,
awesome.
So kind of sold out. But then what is selling out? You know, interesting. It's just very interesting to see that like multiple women. I think there was another woman as well. Her name was Saida Al-Hura. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that properly, but 15th century woman who had a very similar life as well. So yeah, it's very cool to see like, well, you know, people that don't get talked about very often, but they often have very, very cool lives.
So is one of those your favourite?
Even after mentioning a very cool female Muslim pirate from the 15th century, I was like, well, no, it's the King Captain from the Pirates of Penzance, obviously.
Yes! Like, I don't know the Pirates of Penzance. Tell me more about this King Captain.
It's a comedy opera by these people called Gilbert and Sullivan. And
oh, yes, yes.
Yes, yeah. And it's the origins of the... Oh, my God, what's the guy's name? I am the model of a modern major general.
Very
good. Yeah, it's that one, which then got pirated. Well, not pirated. Put into Hamilton.
Oh, yes.
Lovingly pirated.
Borrowed.
Yeah, yeah. And he's just the pirate captain, pirate king in Pirates of Penzance is just so like, he's a dweeb. Like, he's just a huge nerd. Like he's such a failure of a pirate captain, and I love him so much because yeah, I think he does take all of the like tropes of being a pirate, and it's just like, you know, the lovingly, like, he's an orphan and he's so sad. And that's the only reason that he's going into piracy. And he's got this band of, like, lonely boys who are all orphans. And we're going to, like, steal all of your women because that's what pirates do. And they're all like, okay. But they just go and gone a jolly a bit and just get drunk and, like, sing some songs. And at the end, they're like, oh, cool. Yeah, like, we didn't have to, like, be pirates, I guess. Like,
Jeremy, who's your favorite?
Mine has always been Blackbeard, and you know, I think just historically his life was kind of like a roller coaster. You know, he was one of the most successful pirates, you know, at least that I've read about. But the fact that he did all of that stuff, he got pardoned, and he sort of like retired. On the East Coast in the United States. I think it was a town called Bath, which I believe is in North Carolina. But then there's so much mystery about how he kind of got into his last battle, his last engagement, where he ended up losing his life. He was a hated man. You know, I guess they shot him 5 times. He was stabbed a bunch in a sword fight, and they beheaded him and hung his head on the bow of a ship. So it was very brutal. But at the same time, there's so much, you know, rumor. And I feel like it's almost like a lot of falsifications of history. You don't quite know where the fictional tales lie and where the facts really are. And because I'm a big paranormal buff, there's tons of rumors about his ghost around the area, anywhere from there to Charleston. So I don't know. To me, that's just interesting. I like the fact that there's no hard known facts and people are still researching and finding new information to this date.
That is cool.
Nasty guy, nasty guy. I don't condone his activities.
Yeah, I feel like that's also part of the what you said about the, like, because you don't know where the, like, truth ends and the fiction begins. I think that's also part of the, like, why it's so easy to make them such a romantic figure as well, because it comes with that inherent, like, how much of it was true? Like, how much do you think was true? And, like, you can, like, really, foster so much. And the kind of bloodiness of it as well makes it feel like taboo to, like, revel in it, I guess. I say, as somebody who likes the kind of, like, I guess not gore, but, like, the idea of, like, creative ways of killing someone. That sounds really wrong, but, like,
no, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. There is a morbid curiosity. It's why people watch the Saw movies, isn't it?
For sure.
Because you're like, how many ways can a person die? Many, very many ways. I think that's a very human impulse. I think we've been doing, I think that there's, like, been an interest in the morbid and the sort of gross and disgusting and the painful for a really long time. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing at all.
I mean, you know, that's why they're called operating theatres. Right?
Yeah,
people used to watch.
That's why they're built in that amphitheater kind of way, the old ones. Is it? Yeah.
I write horror, so it's kind of my wheelhouse. I like to mix reality with fiction. And that's where my head's at all the time. I promise I'm a decent person outside of my fiction writing.
That's okay. As long as it's fiction, it's fine. The problem is if you try and do it to someone else in real life, but... There are no serial killers in this podcast, as well as no facts. that means that that's not a fact either. Whoops. We'll be back after this break.
Hello, everyone. This is Helen, the voice of Azu from Rusty Quill Gaming and host of our chat show, Enthusiasm. If you haven't heard yet, Rusty Quill has a brand new original audio drama, Trice Forgotten. Trice Forgotten is a swashbuckling found family adventure created by Nemo Martin. Alestes likes to keep her head down while she works as a merchant, couriering deliveries and carrying travellers to destinations across the seas. Only, as her travellers gradually become permanent crewmates, she realises her ship has become a floating museum, a laboratory, a vault of repatriated
treasured treasures and a chef's kitchen. After spending most of her life with the understanding that nothing changes, no matter how hard you fight, Alestes is faced with a choice. Will she use her new network of allies to build a safe harbor and potentially a future for her new community? Or will she once again put her head down and drown in her sea of excuses? Thrice Forgotten is the latest audio drama from Rusty Quill, creators of multiple award-winning podcasts, including The Magnus Archives and Rusty Quill Gaming. Search for Thrice Forgotten, that's T-R-I-C-E, wherever you listen to your podcasts, or visit www.rustyquill.com for more information. And welcome back. So, I do realize that I didn't say who my favorite pirate was.
Yeah.
Inquiring minds want to know.
Yes. I mean, I assume that all the listeners want to know, because obviously all the listeners want to know what I think at all times.
The best Rusty Quill member. Yeah, as you said.
Well, what I have been trying to think about while you've been talking about all of your amazing pirates is this book series called The Liveship Traders by Robin Hobb, which is not about pirates, but there are pirates in it. No, I guess in some ways it is about pirates. They are quite major. It's very hard to explain because it's a trilogy and it's a really complex plot, but some pirates steal this family's ancestral ship, and so the family fits out another ship to try and get it back, and then there's also a load of stuff going on with like civil war and slavery and family ties and dragons.
of course, the standard thing.
It's your show. If you want to let that count, you let it count.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that's
well, the thing is,
you let us know.
The thing is, one of the POV characters, Captain Kennett, so he's a pirate. And he is the most monstrous person in fiction I think I've ever come across. Just horrible, horrible. Does not care at all about anyone's feelings. But he does a really, really good job of making it seem like he does.
Ooh.
Including accidentally. Like, he will say something that he means dismissively, but someone will take it in completely the opposite way that he meant it.
Ooh.
And, like, he does horrible, absolutely irredeemable stuff in this book. But he's a really, really interesting character. And spoilers for anyone who is reading this series of books. But part of the reason for why he can't connect with people in the same way turns out to be because he... Oh, God, how am I going to put this? Because now I have to explain the previous trilogy. Basically, what happened is he sort of got his empathy sucked out. And has never figured out how to relate to people without it. And it's actually a very, very sad story because he's a heavily, heavily traumatized person.
Do you find it's easier to, you know, kind of feel remorse for people that are just horrible? They do horrible things when you find out where they're, you know, maybe they didn't start out that way, but something caused them to be that way.
I don't feel remorse or anything. I feel bad for the younger him that didn't deserve all these horrible things that happened to him.
Right.
But he still made a series of increasingly terrible choices. Like,
that's the thing, isn't it? He chose to do that.
Yep.
Look at all the other people who've had terrible people, terrible things happen to them.
No, plenty of traumatized people who are still wonderful people.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I think he's one of sort of, it's very rare that you get a kind of villainous character like that and you see so deeply into their psyche, I guess. And so for me, he's one of my favorite pirate characters.
Yeah, and I think you can revel a bit in it as well when, like, even, like, not in a, like, redeeming way, but in a, like, it's interesting, it's fascinating to see his... to see an irredeemable character's psyche, because I think that writers don't go into that because they feel like they have to redeem someone if they're going to like go that deep into someone. And if they're like, you know, thinking about a villain, either you make them like, ha ha ha, I'm evil, or like, ha ha ha, I'm evil, but actually I'm going to become good at the end. You don't get to see so much of the like, yeah, really fascinating, like, I'm evil of my own volition, even despite my past. And I think that's a good pirate thing as well. They're like, they know that they're not doing good things, but they're still really good characters.
Well, this is something I love about fanfic, is that, you know, fan fiction writers will take a villain and go, right, let's really step into how many choices they made and kept doing that and kept on that path, even though they could see what it was, how they got there and stayed there. That I love that. I love that kind of deconstruction stuff, but then I could probably do a whole what are these about fan fiction anyway.
We're probably not going to do a fan fiction one, I'm afraid.
Damn it!
I know, I would love to. Maybe we can just have a conversation that isn't recorded for hashtag content about fan fiction.
Yeah,
is that
I hear people do that. Yeah.
None of that.
Faye, you and I can make an enthusiasm pirated version where we talk about fan fiction. We're going to call it Oh, I can't make puns on the fly. Happy gas. Oh no, that's
infogasm. Oh, I don't know. Anyway, yes, hi.
The other interesting thing also about Captain Kennett as a character is you also see him through other people's eyes, the people who hate him and also the people who love him, like his crew and his girlfriend and this young boy that he sort of takes under his wing and starts to see him as a father figure, and his ship, which happens to be alive. I didn't mention the ships were alive.
Oh yeah, the dragons, the anthropomorphic ship, yay.
So it's interesting seeing also people's views of him, who, like, the disconnect between who they think he is and who he is internally. Is also, anyway, yeah, that's my favourite pirate character. I was also debating Captain Hook, but that would just be purely based on the gifs I've seen of Jason Isaacs playing Captain Hook. With that in mind, I did have another question that sort of, I hope, is segueing nicely along, which is, do we have like a favourite pirate media? I mean, we've got Peter Pan, we've got Pirates of the Caribbean, we've got Black Sails, we've got Treasure Island. I can't think of any other pirate media.
Sinbad.
Oh, no.
Sinbad. I forgot, like, I was in the break remembering. I was trying to think, like, what was the first pirate that I ever loved? And I was like, oh, it was Sinbad. Like, absolutely, it was Sinbad.
I think I'm probably the same. Yeah.
I never saw Sinbad, but I always wanted it. I had a VHS of Aladdin, I think, and there's an advert for Sinbad.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah, I should watch that, and I never got round to it.
Yeah. I think you should. I watched it recently. It holds up fairly well.
We're talking the recent one rather than the Harryhausen one, right?
I don't know. It was on a Disney VHS. It could be anything.
True, yeah. Because the mouse owns a lot, let's face it.
What do you think, Jeremy?
Well, I've got to echo your Captain Hook interest there. Because, I mean, first of all, there's so many different ways that Captain Hook is portrayed. In the book Peter Pan, have you read the book?
No.
Yes. That's the first version I read, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Much different than I read it as an adult. I'd like to read it again, actually, because it's been, you know, several years. But it was so different. And then you look at like the cartoon version that I remember from childhood. And then you look at the Dustin Hoffman version, and, you know, there's so many iterations of it. I think growing up, I thought, you know, this guy's just like upset because he lost his hand, you know. There's way more to it than that. I'm not trying to oversimplify.
So
but yeah, Captain Hook, I dig what you're saying there. I get where you're coming from.
Can you tell me about how the book is different to the films? Because I've never read the book.
Oh, is God. It? Darker, for a start.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
God. Any version you've seen of it, the book is darker and more complex, definitely.
I think I read it when I was maybe 20, 21, so a long time ago. I just remember these shadow beings that were going around chasing Peter Pan. And, like, Peter Pan was kind of creepy. his character alone was really creepy. It was very, very much like something that I, you know, back then I wasn't as into the horror stuff, but I wouldn't read it before bed, you know? It's just creepy. Oh. I don't know, it creeped me out. It gives me the willies. Very few things do that. You know, I can go ghost hunting and I can go watch most horror movies. There's a very few things that give me the creeps, and that was just a book that was just it unsettled me, you know. Maybe not so much the Captain Hook character himself, but Peter Pan's character for sure. Yeah, it's very different. It's like if you read Alice in Wonderland and compare it to the Disney cartoon. Very, very different.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Alice in Wonderland is really bizarre.
Yeah.
But for each of the characters, it goes into way more of the origin story. So you learn a bit more about James Hook's childhood and him growing up and all the rest of that kind of stuff. And I was, it was a wee bit longer ago again that I read it. I was probably about 8 or 9. Arguably a little too young to be reading that, but yeah, I remember it did unsettle me, and the character of Hook was way more than he's always portrayed. I often feel it's like a weird indignation whenever I see him pantomimed, you know. I just think no, there's a lot more to him than that. Even though I still don't like him, there's a lot more to him than that, and a lot more to Peter Pan. But yeah.
I'd love to see a good realistic version of that book made, you know, instead of like the buffoon, you know, he always plays the buffoon with his sidekick. Really get into the characters and I don't know. That'd be interesting.
Hoffman added an interesting bit of darkness to it. He wasn't full buffoon.
Right.
They left that to Smee, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Hoffman added just like, he's suicidal to it.
Yeah. That was what the f-
remember
that? That was dark. Yeah, definitely.
But it was played for comedy somehow.
Oh my god.
But I will say, Hook is one of my favorite like childhood films. Loved that film so much.
That was good.
That was a good film.
But it's so bizarre when you watch it as an adult. You're like, what? How did these decisions get made?
Oh, there's a weird little factoid if you're in for those. When they used to do the original stage play of Peter Pan, they would always have the man who played Mr. Darling, like the father figure, would always play Hook.
Yeah.
Yes, they did that in the Jason Isaacs Peter Pan too.
There you go. So that's a tradition. So they always doubled that up. And so there's all sorts of stuff there about, you know, the darkness and sinisterness of angry father figures. And say, you could really get into all that if you wanted to.
I think I should read the original Peter Pan because
I recommend it.
I love stuff like that. Okay.
I want to reread it. It's definitely worth it. It's a good read.
One of the things that I quite liked wondering about, just because I haven't read the book, is like, I was like, what if Hook was a lost boy and he just like grew up and that's why Peter Pan hates him?
Yeah.
What if they were friends, but now Peter Pan doesn't remember? He just hates him because...
The pirates are lost, aren't they? They're all trapped in this same ever living not growing up thing themselves. The pirates don't get older.
So oh, do they not?
No, they're as eternal as the boys.
Oh.
The Never Neverland is...
Are they all dead?
Never Neverland is a weird place. You know?
Are they dead? Are they dead, Faye?
I don't know.
It kind of sounds like the shadow, what they did with the Shadow Realm in Yu-Gi-Oh! Sorry to make this about
no, please.
Anime.
Let's go like, sideways.
That it was originally in the Japanese anime, it was they died once they lost the card game. But when they like Americanized it, they couldn't, they were like, you can't kill them, it's a children's card game. So they were like, yeah, they've gone to the Shadow Realm.
Wow.
Oh my god, I had no idea.
Yeah,
terrifying. I would like to end the show with a quick fun question, which is, if you were a pirate, what would your pirate name be? I really want mine to have been like alliterative. I want to be something like, I don't know, what begins with G and is piratey?
Gar. No, you talk about gunnels or guns or anything like that.
I mean, something like Gun Grabbing Gould or something like that.
But the fact that your name has hell in it, surely, you know, you could be like the Hellbound Ghoul, or I don't know, something like that.
That's true. Hell's Bells, there we go.
Hell's Bells.
That's a tough one.
Helen Hell's Bells Gould, the pirate.
I like it.
Any other takers?
I'd have to go something simple like Short Beard or... I'm horrible at coming up with things like that on the spot.
I love that. Short Beard
is here.
Which implies Arr. Big Beard.
I've actually... Someone called me this as a poet. Someone used to host me on various stages. So I'll probably just stick with this because in different contexts, it sounds far more sinister. But they used to bill me as the Welsh Whisperer. And wow. I'm like, yeah, that could sound super sinister if, you know, whispered in a dark tavern corner. You don't want to cross the Welsh Whisperer. Okay. Mm. So, you know, I'm going to stick with that one, I guess.
Oh, I love that.
It's mysterious for sure.
Uh-huh. It's mostly because sound engineers really, really hate dealing with my voice. They'll have had like some punk act on before me and they're like frantically turning the sound up. But yeah.
Okay. And Nemo, what about you?
I've been trying to think of a pun because so Nemo means nobody in Latin. So I've been trying to think of something to do with that and... I'm just so bad with naming things.
I mean, you could just be Captain Nemo and there would
I could
be
just be Captain Nemo was the thing, yeah.
And no one knows what you look like.
Exactly, yeah. And
always got like a big
mysterious
hat.
Under the sea and very beautiful. And he also hates mankind and collects Victor Hugo novels. So that's basically me.
Wonderful. All right, that's definitely all that we've got time for. This has been so much fun. I have laughed so much.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on the show, everyone.
Thank you.
And thank you, listener, for coming along with us. I hope that you have learned about pirates like I have and enjoyed our chatter. And we'll see you on the next episode. But for now... It's goodbye from me. Goodbye. And it's goodbye from all of them. Do I say goodbye, everyone?
Goodbye.
Watch Black Sails.
Watch Black Sails. Yar.
Yar. Yar.
Enthusiasm is a podcast distributed by Rusty Quill and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 International License. It is directed by Helen Gould, produced by Lori Ann Davis, with executive producers Alexander J. Newell and April Sumner, and edited by Marissa Ewing, Tessa Vroom, Jeffrey Nils Gardner, and Catherine Ranella. Thanks for listening.